I'm Henny of Stratophysica, which is a Berlin-based intermediate dance collective, and we've been making work since 2012. Over this period, we did several collaborative efforts to build interactive performance experiences between mediums, including 4D sound, animated and creative coded visuals, and choreographies with sensors on the body to affect sound and visuals. If you want to know more about those works, you can visit our website in the link I will paste into the Telegram chat. But we're here tonight to talk about the current work we're building and researching, titled Human ID, which is coming from questions about human identity and technologies like AR, AI, and the ability to deepfake a personality, about what is that thing that makes us human, and why is it we feel so threatened if it could be overwritten? From my side, these questions began a couple of years ago when I started to teach myself coding and wondering if I could take some of the syntax and put it on bodies and choreographies. And at that time, Daria and I, we were making a lot of loops of choreographies, so I thought it would be fun to do something simple like dot pop or dot push and just play around with the phrasings there. So it started out in a playful way, but soon bigger questions emerged. I became fascinated with this idea of being able to look at the code behind a project like a website, and you can clearly see like what is functioning, how it looks, and so on. And I started to wonder, well, what is the code behind the human? Which is not as easy an answer to discover or to even peek in on. But we started with a simple outline. So thinking of the human as a shell that runs scripts or programs, and then this bigger question of, could we take one performer or shell and exchange the script from the other and erase the original copy or erase the personality of the other before our very eyes? In other words, is it possible to produce a live deep fake in performance? Since those questions emerge, I've been lucky to research and try to test these research from these questions through the support of the Combustible residency that we're currently being hosted by Counterpulse in San Francisco until April of next year, and in collaboration with Alessandra Leone, who is a co-founding member of Stratophysica and does the visual content, the video and lighting, as well as collaborations in sensor building, but unfortunately could not join us tonight. The two collaborators that are present is Daria Kaufman, who is a longtime partner in crime in making thoughtful, intricate choreographies, dance, and is kind enough to have shared a stage with me over the last 10 years or so, or more. And I would say the one asking a lot of relevant probing questions to help mine the meaning of the works, as well as Ian Heisters, who is a new media artist working with dance and installation and is the AI researcher for this project. And I will also post links of their works, their websites, in the chat. But without further ado, I'm going to let them talk about their parts of the research for this work. Daria.
Well, actually, before I talk, I just wanted to show some movement studies that I've created in as part of Human ID. Just take a couple of minutes to show these short choreographies that I call glitch studies. And there's no sound for this, just so you know. just a few short choreographies that I've been developing that I call glitch studies. And let's talk about their relevance to the project now. I mean, I feel like in general, we're looking at how individuals' appearance, their body language, their mannerisms are mediated through video technology. And like so many of us in the world right now, I'm spending so much time on video calls, interacting with people so much that way. And over the past months, there are all these moments when I'm on a video call with someone where it just like freezes on their face. And it's like this strangely intimate and voyeuristic moment. I don't know that they know that they're frozen. I also don't know if I'm frozen or not. And I'm just like staring at them in this kind of punishingly naked moment. And it's like simultaneously painful, but I can't really look away. And I've just been thinking about that, and that this is how so many of us are interacting now, that this is just our new normal. So those are like the freeze moments that I find just actually really powerful and kind of poetic in of themselves. And then also the glitches where, you know, there's just like this kind of stuck in place back and forth. I've always been interested in glitch in video art and sound art. And I feel like there's some sort of opportunity for transformation in the glitch, for what the thing that is glitching, the glitch is like a vehicle for it to transcend whatever it is. So I've always been interested in that. And right now I feel like, again, through video calls, I'm being confronted by this glitch phenomenon quite a bit. And I also feel like it just has greater relevance in the world right now, because I mean, the whole world is sort of glitching right now. We're all stuck in place. We're not able to move forward or back. And we're just, but we need to move, you know? So this is all what's been inspiring these studies. And yeah, it's related that in terms of human ID, I feel like something we're creating this entire project through video, which none of us have ever done before. I mean, we're working remotely at it. Like, never have all four of us been in the same place. And it's just gonna continue to be like this for a while. And it's like a whole other way to create. And it's interesting because it's become like the process of this remoteness and this everything being mediated by video has become the subject of the piece, I feel, is like, how are identities mediated by video technologies, filtered by them? So yeah, that's something, that's a little bit of my personal thread. And I guess there, I'll just pass it on to Ian.
Hi, I'm Ian. So picking up from what Daria's, like the running this entire project through various video networking devices, one of the things I've been starting to think about is how the, because we've been working with these neural networks and doing some research around how we can build those into the piece to create certain deep fakes, and thinking about how a neural network can learn an identity of a person, and if there's any valence of who that person actually is learned by the network. And for me, there's this question of whether the non-neural networks, but the networks that are connecting us now, you know, the Google and the Facebook and the Zoom, are, while we're working on this project, are learning something about the identity of the project itself in this like kind of lower tech, less obvious way. Some of the deep learning stuff we've been working on, let me share my screen here. Okay, y'all see this. One of the initial things that we started talking about was so that the piece is very much about identity and how identity is expressed through movement and how a neural network can be interposed into that relationship to start fucking with that relationship. So we we researched this deep learning technique called motion transfer. This is some of the early research. This is based on a paper out of Berkeley called UC Berkeley here in California called Everybody Dance Now. But this applied to, obviously, Daria is here along the top and Hannah is along here on the bottom. So what we do is we take a bunch of frames of video of, say, Daria dancing, and we run pose estimation on that. That like reduces her body position to a set of labels about where her different body parts are. We train a neural network on a performance of hens that learns the visual style of her, what she looks like visually. And then we can apply the structure that we pulled out of Daria's performance and apply it to hen's visual representation. And we end up with, down here on the bottom, we end up with a synthesized image of hen's image performing Daria's movement. This one's a little bit buggy. You see like her shadows get picked up by the neural network as part of her body because the shadows look so much like a body. But it provides this opportunity for like the kind of this weird puppeteering and this weird amalgamation of their identities as expressed through through their bodies and then through the camera. Like the camera becomes a really important player in this, and it brings up a lot about how you're filming it, and both technically and in terms of cinema. So let me show this. So then based on that outline, we can take a video like this of hen performing a movement. And then we train a model on Daria's visual representation, and we can get Daria. This is very buggy still. We're testing, experimenting, performing the same movement, even though she never performed this dance. So let's put these side by side. And we'll restart them just so you can see the synchronicities. So obviously, like, there's errors in what the neural network learns about Daria's identity and her visual representation. And it seems to get especially screwed up around the face. I think it mixes up. It's learned a lot about her hair, but is a little bit confused about what's hair and what's face. So it kind of like, if you look closely, you can see some upside down eyeballs in her face. And like, it's just like all this contorted. That's something we might address, or it's something we might leave in the piece. But it's also, it's strange watching these videos when you're making them and seeing yourself, like what you recognize as yourself. Oh, that's me. That's Daria. But there's a video of me doing something that I never actually did. It creates this weird dissonance. So coming back to, I just wanted to share some of the research we've done around this. The original paper that we're working off of does this skeleton-based structural analysis of the body. I started playing around with doing, there's another technique that was developed by Facebook actually called Dense Pose, And what you see here, so under this is there's a video of Hen, just from the shoulders up. And dense pose, instead of just marking out the basic structure, like here's the head, like just these two little dots in a line, it actually creates like a silhouette or a mask. And then we can also lay over eyebrows, nose. And this becomes really helpful for different kinds of video. Like the skeleton-based analysis is really, it has to have the full body in view. And like when it loses a limb, it starts to freak out. And so it creates a lot of limitations in terms of what you can do cinematically. And when we start working with dense pose, it opens up some of the frames we can do. It still has a lot of limitations. But for instance, we can do a shoulders up shot, a medium close up like this. And then we can do a sort of a portrait transfer. I'm standing in here because I couldn't get a video from Daria. We can do a portrait transfer. This has other shortcomings. For instance, because so the dense pose, instead of creating a skeleton, it creates like a full outline of the body. You end up with this, again, this amalgamation of bodies where like it ends up with my facial shape, including my beard, because it doesn't understand how to segment a beard from a body. But then it's like Hen's appearance on my outline or my body type. And obviously there's some strange glitches around the mouth, probably also due to my beard. It always throws off these kinds of computer vision analyses. But there's something about a portrait that I've been interested in on this project, because like the portrait is this photographic analog of a lot of the things we're talking about in terms of capturing an identity. Or finding an identity photographically or cinematically. But I've also been playing around with some like unintended mappings, kind of leaning into the space where things start to screw up, and you can start to see the edges. Instead of going for this like hyper-realistic deep fake that you could use for propaganda, you know, like, oh, here's Vladimir Putin saying things he would never say, or Barack Obama. How can we actually go the other direction and find the edges of the algorithms and where they screw up? And because then you can kind of get a perspective into what's actually happening and what it's actually doing. So here's some experiments I did with mapping my hand to my face. And so the neural network is learning, you're basically telling it like this hand equals this face. And you do that tens of thousands of times. And it's able to resolve. And then when I show it a different hand in a similar position, it's able to say, oh, okay, that's this face. And the face you see on the right, I hope it's on your right, is completely synthesized, but it maintains a lot of the details of the original photography or cinematography. But then you can also start to see these weird artifacts of the algorithm, both in terms of like this cross-hatching that you see on the beard. Sometimes it resolves really clearly and you're like, oh, that's a photograph of a person. And then sometimes it almost, you see more of the hand. And so in working on this, like one of the things I'm interested in exploring is like, what is the algorithm actually learning about me? Is it learning anything about my identity? Hold on one second, make this go away. Is it actually learning anything about my identity? Is there some kind of vectorized representation of my identity in the same way that a photograph, we can say, captures some dead moment of somebody, some little slice of their identity, you can see it shine through and that's legible to you. Is there some sort of, you know, n-dimensional representation of that person in the network that's left behind? Is this a way of maintaining a memory of a person? Yeah, I think that wraps it up for what I have to say.
Thanks, guys. So we have with us today Chris Harris and Miriam Simon, and I will love to invite them to introduce themselves.
Sure, I'm happy to go first. Thanks, Hen. Thanks, Ian and Daria. That was interesting to see what you've been working on there. Yeah, my name's Chris. I have had historically quite a technical background. I studied AI quite a long time ago. And long story short, became quite, although I started studying AI because I was fascinated by human data and human computer interaction and biomimicry, I became quite disillusioned with a lot of the uses of the technology. And indeed, there's a lot of critique about the way we currently approach AI from, you know, the direction of which we approach it, mimicking or rather taking the human intelligence as the apex of intelligence and trying to mimic that or using it to subvert our own intelligence. So I appreciate the investigation that you have done into where things break down and, you know, using this as a critical investigation into the scope of our relationship with identity and how much a machine can or cannot learn. I'll let Miriam also say a few words about herself, who I also know is a very interesting HCI practitioner. Miriam.
Thanks. My name is Miriam Simon. I'm an artist. I also actually, I do user experience design. So I think a lot about how humans interact with machines, and just broadly, as an artist, interested in the social and poetic and political and weird implications of new technologies and bodies. So yeah, really excited actually about everything you guys said.
Cool. Daria, I had a couple of comments on your rather observations on the glitch studies that you showed that I really liked. What I mean, you mentioned the time we spend on Zoom and the Zoom fatigue we get. And I feel like a lot of that is because of the lack of feedback we get in a virtual capacity as opposed to in a physical capacity. And you mentioned the role of technology in mediating and indeed in reducing that bandwidth we have between each other. And what I really saw in your glitch performances was this asymmetry of perspective. I think we always, to some degree, have an asymmetry of perspective, even when we're one human talking to another human, albeit our context very much grounds us in some kind of mimicking of where we are. But when we're so distant, I feel like the symmetry of perspective is so, there's so much dissonance there between what I see and what the other person sees. And especially when things break down and start to glitch out and you become this voyeur in this slice of reality, like you mentioned, this is almost punishing voyeurism you can't quite look away from. I think we're constantly fascinated by what is quite an unconventional viewpoint of a normally conventional scenario. So yeah, I appreciated your studies there at some point.
Thank you. Really appreciate that. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just interrupted. Okay, part of the Zoom beauties. There's a lot, but I'm gonna ask like the last question I had first because it's kind of a really big one. So one of the last things Ian said, but also kind of what all of you guys were talking about, like what is the algorithm learning about me? Is it really learning about my identity? Then there's this question I would pose, but I'm not. About what Hen was starting with around like personality getting put in another shell, but then like personality here is equated to movement, which I get, but also that's like, a big thing to talk about. But then I just recently was listening to like Susan Sontag talking, right? And the whole thing of like taking a photo and what the photographer takes from reality, takes from that moment, takes from the subject. And this is just a still photo that you're printing, right? And so then it really like kind of exploded my mind of everything you guys are doing, because what are you taking? So that's my first question. It's kind of a huge one, but because you guys have started doing this, and I actually see it a bit more like you guys are finding really the beautiful part and where the machine gives you more rather than takes away than like a human to human. But I do wonder, like having done this process, like, like what is it taking from you, or what are you taking from each other, or yeah.
I can speak to that a little bit. There's a lot in there. Well, I guess I'll say that I'll try to focus on two different threads. One is like I wanted to mention that like earlier on in our process, Ian introduced us to Miriam Boehm. Is that her name, Ian?
Svetlana Boehm.
Svetlana Boehm, thank you. Got Miriam and her confused. Who writes about nostalgic technology and finding the humanity in the flaws and the errors, going towards the errors. And I feel like that's kind of become a touchstone. Like that was really useful for me to read, and it keeps returning, this wanting to look at the flaws and the errors. If the error is human, then if you want to find the human in the machine, you go towards the mistakes. And I think that's kind of, so that's been a kind of touchstone for the project. And then something else you were saying, Miriam, another thread towards the end, I lost it though, about
taking the interest in this taking, like what are you
I think like what is being captured, does it even belong to me? The thing that's being captured, where does it lie, you know? I think that's a really interesting question. And I understand people feeling so threatened by these technologies and the notion that someone can take your image and make it do anything you want. And then that gets described as and this violation. But the thing is, the thing that's being taken, it's you and it's not you. It's the representation of you. So I think it's just the right territory right now. And I'll leave it at that.
I'm kind of surprised to hear you say that you, like, that we're creating all this beauty. Because I think like what it's taking is so obvious to me in these strange like neural pastiches of different body parts in this like strange, like, I mean, it's like, it's grotesque. And I think, I mean, where the beauty does come through is, it was something in the solar punk, like manifesto for this event of, like imagining new possibilities for our relationships to technology. And that is in there. And that's like also from the Svetlana Boym, she talks about it in terms of nostalgia for like a future or even a present that isn't now, like is a parallel present to the current. She calls it the off-modern. So we have our modern, the dominant modern ideology that AI is going to save us, and it's also all going to put us all out of jobs, and Elon Musk is, you know, creating this modern notion of AI. I mean, and I'm using him as a stand-in for a lot of people. But then there's an imagination or a nostalgia for this other possibility we had, where technology was built for these kinds of interrogations that we're doing, for creativity and for thoughtfulness and for beauty. And part of what we're doing is, I mean, the tools that I'm using were built for like automated driving. Like a lot of it was built to train cars on how to drive. And so we're taking these like high grade industrial tools and hacking them so that we can create this other possibility for an application of technology that is a little more introspective. I don't think that answers any questions, though.
But are you trading, like, this is my question. Are you trading because you are, the thing I find beautiful is like all these, yeah, like the piece Daria made and all of the weird glitches and you, the hand inside your face, like all this crazy, beautiful to me stuff that is in the air, blah, blah, blah. But like, what are you trading for that? That's, I guess, my question.
That's a good question.
I wanted to just maybe follow on from that a little bit and extend that into the question that I had, that from, especially when Ian, you're showing the puppeted movement and the fact that the machine was seeing into different parts and projecting more human there, perhaps. What I was really, what really hit me there is the bias of identity that we have, because, you know, we as humans have a bias of what constitutes as our identity. And the machine now has a bias towards what constitutes as identity based on what is trained it. And I think bias is right there because no two are necessarily correct. I mean, what is our identity? And what isn't? What is the environment? What is the machine right to project a human into the side of the wall? So the question that I wanted to, that led up to for me was asking you as artists and practitioners doing this work, whether you've had any shifts of identity or whether you've grappled with this or if there's been anything that's kind of come to mind in that way that's changed or that you have new considerations after doing this.
For me personally, this project, like, it's been just very extended because of COVID and just working this way, working through technology so much. It's like you're interacting with someone, there's you and there's them, and then there's the thing that is emerging between you. And I feel like in some ways the technology, that space between, is bigger. Because there's more of a disconnect, there's also more potential for something to arise in between. And I'm just in our process, for instance, for a while, I was like really frustrated. I was like wanting to hold it and know what it is and like be able to frame it neatly. And I kept coming up with a frame, like, it's this. And then we would get on a call together and, never mind, it's not that. So then, okay, now it's this. And like this constant back and forth between being with them virtually and then being on my own, and all these, the storytelling that goes on, and I have my own storytelling that I do on my own, and then I have to try and reconcile it with them on these virtual calls, and it was just getting exhausting. So eventually I just kind of let go and was like, okay, the story is just, it's emerging, and I need to not try to have so much control over it, stop trying to hold it, just like let it be what it is. And let it ping pong is something that we've, a structure that we've landed on. Let it ping pong. And each time the ball comes back, it's a little different. And that's okay. And I don't have to hold it so neatly. Did that make any sense?
Yeah, that was that was beautiful. Yeah, thank you very much, Daria. Like the identity is created in the spaces in between. And
just to let it be and to not be afraid of that. And to know that that can happen and I can still be me, that I'm porous and that's okay.
Brilliant words to end on. I think that's about all we have time for. So thank you very much, Daria, Ian, Henny, and Miriam. Pleasure to speak with you all.
Thank you, Chris and Miriam.
Thank you.
Thanks.